What's up, folks? You're watching or listening to, as the case may be, Cogitations. Cogitations is the podcast where we think about things, we contemplate them, we turn them over in our minds, and then we discuss them. Daniel chapter 7, verse 28, Daniel writes, "Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me, my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart." We're not going to keep the matter in our heart. We're going to talk about it. Today we're going to talk about the path less traveled. And I think about this poem by Robert Frost. "Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and I took the one less traveled by." And you know what? My wife, over time, she's a English major. She graduated with a degree in English, and she only has a few hours of university left to actually have a master's in English, which is pretty impressive if you ask me. But she is a very well accomplished, and she's published. She's a published writer, stuff like that. You might not know that about her. But anyway, she had to write in school a paper, and she chose to write about this poem. And she convinced me that there's two ways to interpret the poem, "Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and I took the one less traveled by." We think of the word "by" as in there's two roads. One is less traveled. One is more traveled. And I traveled down the one that less people travel down. But the grammatic construct, and even from what she made the case in her paper, that the grammatic construct and even the context indicates that it could be either way, that you took the one less traveled or you took the one most traveled. All right? So chew on that. But anyway, that doesn't have anything to do with the podcast today. I'm so thankful to have a show sponsor like Lindsay Faye Dotson. If you need any kind of flyers or business cards or graphic design for, and I say graphic design, she doesn't design logos and stuff. She does your advertisements and whatnot. Email her, reach out to her. She's reasonably priced, and you will be supporting somebody that's local, not a big corporation, all that good stuff. What's going on, Jason Goldtrap? Angie B, you're not late. You're just right on time. And Facebook user, I'll take this time to say, I don't know who you are if you're in the We Talk Truth group, but that's okay, because we're glad that you're here regardless of who you are. Now, the path less traveled. Folks, this is the longest article that I've written for Substack. It's about 2,000 words, so I'm going to get right into it. I'm going to read it today, and I'm going to offer some of my thoughts. Full transparency, I stole the idea for this from a Facebook post I saw from one of my friends. If you're ever reading my Substacks, or you're listening to my podcast, and you're thinking, well, this sounds vaguely familiar. It's tickling my memory a little bit. All right, I don't full-blown plagiarize, but I will steal ideas. I will steal verbiage. I will steal phrases. And, I mean, that's just all there is to it. That's what I want to do. It's not illegal. It's not unethical. You know, like Barry O'Dell said the other day, if you plagiarize one person, or if you copy one person, it's plagiarism. If you copy a group of people, it's research. Well, take that for what it is. I'm sure I have some enemies out there that will cast me in the worst possible light that they can. Say, yeah, Tony, he just gets his stuff from other people. Yeah, I do. Go kick rocks. All right, the path less traveled, living an honorable life through unpopular choices. Jason Goldtrap understands nuanced humor. Jason Goldtrap says he invented the word plagiarism. I'm with you. I believe it. All right. The path less traveled, living an honorable life through unpopular choices. In today's society, it's not uncommon to witness a divergence from the principles that guide an honorable life. As followers of Christ, we are called to live in a manner that is sometimes controversial and unpopular, yet undeniably righteous. Below, we're going to explore 10 unpopular yet effective approaches to living an honorable life grounded in biblical principles. Number one, offer kindness without explanation. Offering kindness without seeking anything in return reflects Jesus's teachings on love and charity. In Matthew 5:44, he instructs, "But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you." In the account of Joseph, we witness a beautiful testament to this principle. Despite being sold into slavery by his brothers, a transgression that could naturally foster bitterness and revenge, Joseph chose a path of love and forgiveness. When eventually rising to power in Egypt, Joseph was presented with an opportunity to retaliate. Yet he chose to embrace them, offering sustenance and protection instead. Sorry, I had something come up in my head that distracted me. Joseph extended kindness without a prerequisite of an apology or explanation for their cruel actions, embodying a graceful spirit that seeks to love unconditionally. We can read Genesis 45:4-5 and read the entire account of Joseph. He starts out as a petulant, entitled little brat, and he ends up this beacon of masculinity, and it's wonderful. So this action of Joseph not only demonstrates tremendous strength and character, but also aligns beautifully with the teachings of Christ, urging us to offer kindness even when it is least expected or deserved. Number two, mind your own business. Oh, I preach this one so often, brethren. In 1 Thessalonians 4:11, y'all knew where I was going before I went there, didn't you? We are advised to study to be quiet and to do your own business and to work with your own hands as we commanded you. Minding your business promotes peace and reduces conflicts. A perfect example is seen in how Ruth carried out her task diligently, focusing on her responsibilities and not engaging in unnecessary disputes. Ruth 2:7, but look at the entirety of Ruth's account. Now, Ruth exhibited a strong sense of responsibility and purpose as she worked tirelessly to provide for herself and her mother-in-law, Naomi. Rather than involving herself in the affairs of others or getting caught up in potential disputes, Ruth focused on her duty gathering grains in the field quietly and respectfully. Her dedication to minding her own business not only helped in sustaining herself and Naomi, but also earned her a good reputation and favor in the eyes of Boaz, the owner of the field, showcasing that a focused and undistracted path often leads to unexpected blessings and favor. And oh, how she was blessed. Number three, do not overreact. Proverbs 15:1 tells us that a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. I'll never forget, this is not in the article, I'll never forget the lesson that I learned in Memphis School of Preaching. You study the Bible 6 hours a day in a formal classroom setting, and then you're 6, 8, 10, 12 hours outside of class if you're studying the way you're supposed to. And but the interesting thing, the most valuable lessons and information that I learned was not from the formal teaching that was on the syllabus, but was when my instructor went off on a tangent, in other words, chased a rabbit or two. One of my instructors relayed this story that a woman from the congregation where he was preaching called him, and her tone was sharp, she was angry, and she just filleted him. Anyway, she cut him to the core, and it was undeserved, he said. But here's how he said he responded. He said, "Sister so-and-so, do I owe you an apology?" And he said that just absolutely disarmed her. So he said every time somebody jumps up and does that, and you'll get them from time to time if you're worth your salt, just say, do I owe you an apology? Or some other way, or some other soft answer. And it disarms people. So Proverbs 15:1 tells us that a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. By not overreacting, we uphold peace and showcase wisdom, a principle vividly illustrated in the life of Abigail. In a highly tense situation where David was infuriated and ready to shed blood in retaliation for Nabal's insolence, Abigail intervened with calmness and strategic diplomacy. 1 Samuel 25:32 through 35, but you can read the entire account there. Abigail approached David with humility, bringing provisions and using words of wisdom to avert a disastrous outcome. Abigail not only recognized the gravity of the impending violence, but also foresaw the regret that David might harbor if he proceeded with his vengeful plan. By not overreacting and instead responding with a well-measured, respectful appeal, Abigail demonstrated exceptional wisdom that not only saved her household, but also preserved David from unnecessary bloodshed. Her actions stand as a testament to the power of a calm demeanor in preventing escalation and promoting peace. We all need to be Abigail's. Number four, do real. I like this one. In essence, quote unquote, do real implores us to lead an authentic life. 1 John 3:18 instructs, my little children, let us not love in word, and the ellipsis there, let us not love in word only, neither in tongue only, but in deed and in truth. It calls folks for a life where actions validate words, a life led by individuals who, like Job, or individuals like Job, rather, who remained righteous and true despite immense trials. Read Job 2, verse 3, but you don't read the whole book of Job. I felt weird just citing Job, but read Job, the whole book, but Job 2, verse 3, specifically for the article. Job is a remarkable embodiment of authentic living, maintaining his integrity, even amidst severe trials and loss. He didn't just profess his faith in words, but demonstrated it resolutely in his actions, refusing to curse God despite provocation and hardships he faced. His unwavering faith and alignment of words with deeds, even in adversity, exemplifies a genuine, quote-unquote, real life grounded in truth and righteousness, showcasing the profound depth of his character and adherence to the divine principles. Well, Job's life stands as a beacon, urging us to live authentically and to honor God, not just in words, but through steadfast faith and action. Number five, do the right thing. Do the right thing because it's the right thing. Our motivation should always be righteousness. Isaiah 1:17, we are encouraged to learn to do well, seek judgment, relieve the oppressed, judge the fatherless, plead for the widow. But Daniel is a sterling example of this scripture in action. Even under a foreign rule and amidst a culture that often contradicted his own beliefs, Daniel chose to uphold his principles, showing dedication to what was right without being swayed by fear or convenience. Read Daniel chapter 1, verse 8 for the article, but read the entirety of the book of Daniel to get his character and how he was set as the third in power over the entire nation. He didn't forget his friends. He always served God. He never slipped, tripped, stumbled, or fell, or faltered in his faith and in his expression of faith through his action. For instance, he resolved himself not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and chose rather a path of righteousness grounded in his faith. This commitment to doing the right thing was so evident when he continued to pray openly to God despite the king's decree that threatened him with death, Daniel chapter 6. This commitment to doing the right thing was also evident, when he continued to pray openly to God despite the king's decree that threatened him with death. That's in Daniel chapter 6. Daniel's life is a testament to the purest form of integrity, one that adheres to righteousness simply because it is right, portraying a moral fortitude that is unyielding in external pressures. Do you know why? This is also something I got from the teachers at school that were, whenever they went on a tangent. Do you know why the lions didn't eat Daniel in the lion's den? There wasn't nothing to him but backbone. Number 6. This is an important one. Incidentally, thank you so much for the comments. I can't believe how many of you are watching. Please be the algorithm for us. Like, subscribe, share, all that good stuff. I would love to grow this where we have 40 or 50 people in attendance in the live stream. That would be great. Naeem Sabir, thank you. Diana Harden, thank you. Good to be here. And Deborah O'Neill says, a Bible class teacher I used to have encouraged others to share or plagiarize anything he said or did because he did the same to spread information. That's it. And Deborah O'Neill says, I used to tell my homeschool, Deborah, I don't know where I got that from. Anyway, I used to tell my homeschool families to make a copy of the table of contents, syllabus, and then go to the library and find the information instead of reading the small paragraphs in the book. Excellent. That's good. In fact, there are topics of discussion, matters of academia, that are promoted even in the Brotherhood, for which there is no credible scholarly references, yet they are repeated as truth. And I have searched and searched and searched, and I've just come to the conclusion that there are things we believe that there's no credible scholarly sources to cite. Not all of them are true. Anyway, awesome. Now, deal only in facts, not hearsay. Let me tell you something. The greatest weapon you have against hearsay is this electronic block I'm holding up right now. If you'll notice, I'm holding up my cell phone. Whenever somebody comes up to me and says, hey, did you hear what so-and-so did and how bad it is? No, I didn't. I've got their phone number. Let's call them and put them on speakerphone. All right. John Smith? Yes, so I've been told that you did X, Y, and Z, and the person that told me is standing right in front of me in your own speakerphone. What do you have to say about that? Did you know that you only have to do that and get a reputation for doing that one or two times? Or you only have to do that one or two times before you get a reputation for doing that, and people will quit coming to you with gossip and hearsay? I tell people all the time, don't you dare tell me anything about somebody else. I will not keep it a secret. I will not keep it private. Now, there are some exceptions to that, but generally speaking, unless you're coming to me with a problem that you have, that you want to discuss about you, and you're trying to figure out how to rectify your situation, and you're taking ownership of the problems that you've caused, I'm not going to keep anything you say secret. In fact, go to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, and people from the congregation wrote a letter to Paul wanting to know and accusing the congregation of the division, and Paul did not allow them to hide behind the shield of anonymity. He said, it hath been reported unto me of thee by those of the household of Chloe. I'm like, yes! Could you imagine what the household of Chloe felt like whenever this letter was read publicly? That's the way I deal. I don't deal with anything else. I hate it. I hate it with a purple passion. I don't know what makes purple so much more than just regular passion, but I've heard that all my life. If you really want to claim how bad you hate something, you hate it with a passion. Well, if you really want to say how bad you hate something, you hate it with a purple passion. Maybe some of y'all know what that means. Anyway, Leviticus chapter 19, verse 16 warns us, "Thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people." There have been gospel preachers that I've had to distance myself from because every time they call me on the phone, they want to tell me about something going on in somebody else's work or somebody else's or another congregation. And I'm like, I don't care. I've got more on my plate than I can handle here. Or they want to call me and say, "Hey, Tony, let me tell you what so-and-so said about you." It took me a while to get to this level, but I'm like, why were they comfortable enough with you to tell you bad things about me? Do you know what would happen if, take Brock Kendall, Aaron Dotson, and Barry Odell. Do you know what would happen if somebody come and told me something bad about Brock Kendall, Aaron Dotson, or Barry Odell? I would tell them to go kick rocks, and don't you ever talk bad about my friends in front of me. I don't have very many of them. I don't want too many of them. I don't do well with maintaining relationships long term. These three men that I'm friends with, and there's some people here locally that I've developed a really close friendship relationship with, but these three men here are friends that I've had. Barry's been my friend since 1996, 1997. Or is it 98? I can't remember. It's been a long time. But my point is, I don't listen to negative things about other people. And I for sure don't listen to negative things and criticism and hearsay about my friends. And I couldn't imagine a situation where somebody would call me and tell me something bad that Aaron Dotson, Brock Kendall, or Barry Odell did. I wouldn't let them do it. Is it considered gossip if you go to a trusted friend for advice about an issue you're having with someone? Yes. You've got to be real careful there. My knee-jerk reaction is yes. It's probably not considered gossip, but you better make for sure that it's an actual trusted friend. In fact, the better thing to do would to be call somebody that you know for sure doesn't know that person you're having an issue with. Because you're going to be biased. They're going to be biased. That's all there is to it. I would say that the first thing you need to do, the person you're having an issue with, because here's how you handle this. This is scripturally how you handle it. So what is it called? It doesn't matter what it's called. Let's just do what scripture says to do. And we'll figure out a name for that maybe when we get to heaven. If you're having an issue with someone, go to them and them alone first. You don't need advice to follow scripture. And if they don't hear you and y'all can't sit down and reason through it together, then you get a witness. And what you do is you don't get a witness and say, "Let me tell you all about this situation." You say, "I need you to come with me while I talk to this person again. I've already talked to him once, but regardless of what we're talking about, you're going to hear it for the first time whenever me and the person I have an issue with is talking." That's how that's handled. So I would say, yes, I think I'm going to stand by what I said. If you go to a trusted friend for advice about an issue you're having with someone, it is very, very possible that's gossip and a sin. Now, what's that have to do? Like, what about therapy and stuff like that? You go to therapy to work on yourself. All right? If you're going to your trusted friend and you say, "I've had a falling out with X individual, and I feel like some of it's my fault," how would you go about trying to foment reconciliation? What would you do? That's not gossip, I don't think. I do think it's circumventing the commandments of the Lord. I question its efficacy, but I don't think it's actual sin. So that's my answer to that question. Good question. Deborah O'Neill says, sometimes it's not so much that they feel comfortable telling you that they need a new source to tell. Nip it in the bud. Barney Fife. Nip it in the bud. You got that right, Deborah. All right. Leviticus 19:16, thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people. It is a red flag if somebody calls me up and says, did you hear about? And I'm like, man, I have separated from people because of that. I just don't like it. And neither does God. Following this principle helps in fostering relationships based on trust and truth. I love Nathaniel. Nathaniel gets a bad rap sometimes, kind of like Thomas. But anyway, Nathaniel, described as a man in whom there was no guile, exemplified this ethos profoundly. John 1:47. Now, I do think Jesus was being a little facetious. In other words, whenever Jesus said what he said about Nathaniel, you know, an Israelite in whom there is no guile, it would be the same thing as me reading Deborah O'Neill's comment. Sometimes it's not so much that they feel comfortable telling you, they just need a new source to tell, nip it in the bud. If I were to respond, Deborah, you got that right. You ain't never lied, sister. Well, Deborah, it's right here is a sister in whom there is no guile. In other words, she spoke correctly. So I do think there was a little bit of facetiousness going on there, but the point still remains. Jesus describes him as somebody in whom there was no guile. And let's read the next paragraph so I can just go on. I've stumbled. I made this point poorly. Hopefully you understand it. If you don't understand it, it's my fault, not yours. Being initially skeptical upon hearing of Jesus from Nazareth, Nathanael didn't simply accept the prevailing hearsay. Instead, he sought to see and know for himself, thus showing a preference for firsthand experience and personal judgment over unverified information. This individual approach to discernment, guided by a commitment to truth rather than hearsay, enabled him to recognize Jesus as the Messiah genuinely and sincerely, showcasing the blessings that come with standing firm in truth and dealing only in facts. Number 7, refuse to treat people the way they treat you. Refuse to treat people the way they treat you. Christ's teachings steer us toward a path of non-retaliation and embrace of righteousness. In the Sermon on the Mount, he guided us, saying, but I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. Matthew 5:39. This ethos is echoed in Paul's letter to the Romans, where he advised, recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. Romans 12:17. Emphasizing a life of honest dealings devoid of vengeance. To whom belongs vengeance, saith the Lord? It is mine, I will repay. Vengeance belongs to the Lord. Romans 12. Following this high road of moral conduct, Stephen demonstrated an extraordinary act of forgiveness, or at least willingness to forgive, during his final moments. While under the brutality of a stoning, he found the strength to pray for his persecutors, embodying a grace that seeks not vengeance, but the welfare of even those who do us harm, as recorded in Acts 7:60. But again, read the whole sermon and account of Stephen. This narrative stands as a powerful testimony to the Christian calling to respond to evil not with retaliation, but with the spirit of forgiveness and righteousness, aligning our actions with the teachings of Christ and his apostles. Desire success for everyone. Philippians 2:4 exhorts us to look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. This selfless approach to life mirrors Jonathan's desire for David's success, even at the cost of his own advancement. Again, read the entirety of the story of David and Jonathan and Saul and the first king and the anointment of David, all that good stuff. But for the article, it's 1 Samuel 20, verse 4. Jonathan, the heir to King Saul's throne, willingly stepped aside, understanding that David was the one chosen by God to be the next king of Israel. Instead of harboring jealousy or competitiveness, Jonathan fostered a deep understanding or deep friendship with David, aiding his path to the throne, even when it meant sidelining his own royal aspirations. This unique portrayal of genuine friendship and selflessness stands as a powerful testament to the Christian call to desire success for others, even when it demands personal sacrifice, illuminating the path of humility and love guided by God's grander design. Treat unjust criticism as a disguised compliment. If you have PTP 365, go look for Dan Winkler's sermons, and there is a sermon about this very thing, how to deal with criticism. In his sermon, very wisely, he states, and I believe this, one way you deal with criticism, even overly harsh, unwarranted criticism, is find the grain of truth in it. Always consider the criticism. Look at it and find the grain of truth. If you are really humble, then you will find the grain of truth. All right? To live honorably, we should heed the guidance of Proverbs 15:31, which urges us to embrace wisdom by listening to life's reproofs. It reads, "The ear that heareth the reproof, I can't speak King James today. The ear that heareth the reproof of life abideth among the wise." This principle was grandly displayed in David's restraint and discernment when he chose not to take Saul's life, even though he had the perfect opportunity to do so. Go read the entirety of the account whenever Saul was pursuing David, and how Saul acted in a reprehensible way, and David always acted righteously, choosing to take the high road. Even in cutting off the hem of his garment, David, from a secular standpoint, David should have killed him. But he didn't, because Saul was God's anointed, and that carried weight with David. 1 Samuel chapter 24, 10 for the article. Anyway, in a cave in the wilderness of En-Gedi, David found himself in close proximity to the king, to King Saul, his relentless pursuer who was bent on taking his life. Despite the pressure and the seeming justification for retaliation, David chose the path of wisdom and spared Saul. This action not only displayed a magnanimous spirit, but also a deep understanding of the value of life and the gravity of taking justice into one's own hands. It demonstrated a superior moral ground rooted in wisdom, where unjust criticism was met with forbearance and grace, not vengeance. David's wisdom in this instance embodies an approach to criticism that goes beyond mere tolerance to a dignified and honorable response, showcasing a remarkable adherence to the principles of wisdom outlined in the scriptures. Number 10, give an unearned compliment. As articulated in Proverbs 12:25, heaviness in the heart of man maketh it stoop, but a good word maketh it glad. I heard something somewhere. I don't know if it's true or not. It certainly sounds true. Someone somewhere whom you have forgotten, remembers you to this day because of some random act of kindness you performed. Never underestimate the power of such. There are people that you remember who brightened your day that do not remember you. That's how that works. We remember the kindness given to us. It's such a small thing to offer kindness to people. In the early Christian church, Barnabas exhibited this by being a continuous source of encouragement, helping to foster unity and growth, as recorded in Acts 4, 36 and 37. Well, his big action, his spectacle, his action was recorded then, but listen, just read everything about Barnabas that you can find, and you'll find this principle extolled. Barnabas, whose name means son of encouragement, was a living testament to the positive force of uplifting others. Barnabas sold a field he owned and brought the money to the apostles to meet the needs of the community, showcasing his generous spirit and trust in the communal vision of the early church. This act went beyond just financial assistance. It was a vote of confidence and a compliment to the apostles in the early Christian community, emphasizing his belief in their mission. His unearned compliments and acts of generosity not only assisted those in the immediate need, but also fostered a spirit of unity, mutual trust, and growth, nurturing a community where individuals could thrive spiritually, fortified by the goodwill and encouragement he constantly provided. Never underestimate the power of giving unearned compliments, of these acts of kindness. So what is the conclusion of the matter? Adhering to these 10 less traveled paths might often present challenges, but as we see in the lives of many biblical figures, there are abundant blessings and rewards awaiting those who choose such noble routes. By incorporating these principles in our daily endeavors, we align ourselves more closely with God's blueprint for a life of righteousness, paving the way for others to emulate a praiseworthy lifestyle. Let us endeavor to live in accordance with God's will, nurturing a community rooted in love, honesty, and fairness, honoring God through our actions. Folks, this is the longest article I've put out, and I hope it didn't get too monotonous, but I enjoyed this one. I think this is another one of those articles that you can keep and you can reference, and on your morning routine, you can read this article and be introspective and reflect on self. And make sure that you're aligning yourself with these. And remember, the time to decide to do what is right is not in the moment when you're faced with two paths down which to travel. The time to decide to do right is whenever you're walking along the road without any decisions to make. And I think that's all I've got. Remember, support our sponsors. For those of you here, there's 17 of you here, I'm going to play the ad from our sponsor, Lindsay Faye Dotson. If you need graphics for events or advertisements or anything like that, be sure and get at her. And here is the commercial. And after the commercial, I'll sign us off. Are you looking to spread the word about your next church event in style? Lindsay Dotson is your go-to designer for church-related advertisements that truly stand out. When it's time to invite members to your upcoming event or share the news of a special gathering, trust Lindsay to deliver. Vibrant flyers that capture attention and set the tone. Memorable postcards that carry your heartfelt message. Eye-catching social media graphics perfect for sharing across all platforms. With a keen understanding of the needs of the events of the Christian community, Lindsay crafts designs that not only look great, but also resonate deeply with your congregation. Get in touch with Lindsay Dotson today to elevate your church event promotions to the next level. Message her on Facebook or shoot her an email at lindseyfaydotson@gmail.com. Share your church's special moments and announcements in the most visually stunning way with Lindsey Dotson's expert touch. Reach out now and let your event shine. All right. Be sure to check out Lindsey Faye Dotson and the services she has to provide. Interesting comment from Jason Goldtrap. Thank you, Diana Harden. This is an excellent article needed by us all. I felt like that. So anyway, thank you. I once had a preacher say that another congregation was doing something in error. I asked, what do the elders say when you ask them about it? I didn't call them, was the reply. Well, the next week I went to that congregation, and it wasn't true. He said he heard it from Brother X, and that's good enough for him. Yeah, that's the thing. In the mouth of two or three witnesses, a thing has to be established. So there would be a scenario where you would not have to call that eldership. But if two or three witnesses told you, listen, we are testifying that congregation is in error because of XYZ, we have validated it, then you wouldn't have had to go to talk to the elders. But yes, that's exactly what I would have done. And I know that this has happened a lot. Like, there's one situation I can think of where a congregation was accused of going off into error because of children's church. And whenever I investigated exactly what they were doing, they weren't having children's church. They were just offering a nursery during a worship service. And again, y'all go back to where Aaron and I talked about that. We did it for 2 weeks. That's an issue of judgment. That's not a matter of fellowship. So yeah, as it turned out, that hearsay was false. So I really appreciate everybody. I appreciate the sponsor that we have. Remember, be the algorithm for us. Subscribe to Substack. The link is in the show notes. The link is in the comments. And subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and Podbean. And that's all I've got. I'm going to let y'all have it. Thank you so much for your encouragement and your comments. This has been Tony Brewer with Cogitations, and we'll catch you on the flip side.